No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome in to the Blake Street Banter. The Rockies Insider here, Patrick Lyons on the Blake Street Banter, joined by my co-host, as always, Noah Spirek. What's going on, buddy?
Life's going, man. Not just with the Rockies, but in general. It feels like a lot of things are piling up. The Rockies aren't piling up runs. I thought it might be my hair, so I cut it, thinking that it might lead to more runs, but so far it hasn't yielded the best results.
How are these late-night games treating you? I know San Diego's a little different because it was on the weekend, but and you have the day game on Sunday at least, whereas LA, they don't believe in getaway days. It's you play at night on the third game of the series, and then good luck getting to your next location and playing that game. What are these night games like for you?
Gosh, every night you kind of have to set a mark where, all right, if it gets to this inning and it's at this time, then we'll deal with it. But the 10-10 starts here on the East Coast being Indiana, we got to move to Central Time. But yeah, it's been a couple late nights, and the worst part is sometimes you get rewarded for staying up and watching these games, but so far it has not been.
Yeah. The reward is not with a win. It's maybe a late home run by Hunter Goodman, which we did see on Monday night, some good innings from the bullpen on Tuesday night. And we're going to get to the two biggest topics really for the Rockies right now, with Chris Bryant going back onto the injured list. And what does his career look like the rest of the way? How much longer is he going to be with the Rockies? Is retirement imminent? And what can the Rockies do to sort of change their fate? Because they very much seem to be broken. But let's get to Tuesday night's game, where Rockies lose 6-2. And I want to get your take on this, Noah, because it seems like I've kind of made the analogy of with baseball being it's like a four-legged stool, where you've got to play solid defense, great starting pitching, great bullpen work, and the offense has to do their job. And for the Rockies, if one of those things doesn't work, the other three unfortunately cannot stabilize the team enough. And you had the defense was fine, no errors for the first time in seemingly a while on Tuesday night. The offense, subpar, 5 hits. You scratch across 2 runs, but you're 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. Bullpen's good, only allows 1 run, but the starting pitching faltered. Ryan Feltner, 2 2/3 innings pitched, walks 6, which matches a career high. And again, when one of those legs of that stool is wobbly and doesn't get the job done, the other three unfortunately cannot pick that and make up for that lost leg.
No, and I'll start with Ryan Feltner. The best part of his night was the first batter on 3 pitches. He perfectly located right on the black. He got Otani to go down swinging. And then from there on out, he seemed to lose track of the command. The broadcast team talked about how in his last start, there was a good 2-3 batter range where, you know, he's barely hitting the strike zone. And then he reeled it back in. That did not happen in LA last night. The offense feels like the entire road trip, and beyond that, really, but on this road trip in particular, we've been talking about the offense struggling. We haven't even been able to say the typical challenge that happens with the Rockies in recent years, where they just can't get the big hit. They can't get a guy home and run with runners in scoring position. Last night, they finally had a lot of opportunities. They go 1-for-10, so it's like, okay, well, you'd love to take advantage of that, but it was a step forward having those men on base. I think the 7th inning kind of summarize the season perfectly. so far, because Kirby Yates comes on, the Rockies down, maybe they were down 6-2 at that point, but the game's not over. And Jacob Stallings, he works a leadoff walk. Then Amador goes down swinging. Tovar goes down swinging. Martini, another veteran, doubles to set up runners on second and third. And then Farmer, he strikes out looking on a great pitch by Yates. But my point I'm trying to make is, so far this season, it's been the veterans that are doing all the heavy lifting. And when you're, you know, year X into a reconstruction, can't say rebuild, that can't happen. The other night when the Rockies finally broke their scoring drought, it was a 34-year-old driving in a 34-year-old to break an all-time franchise scoring drought. It's been almost an impossibly hard-to-understand struggle bus in 2025 for the Rockies.
Yeah, that was the thing that I've been talking about on the Rockies Insider all offseason, is you'd rather lose 110 games with all of your young players up in the majors. And granted, there are a lot of young guys that are on this team right now. And careful what you wish for, because, okay, maybe they do lose 110 games with a lot of these young guys on the roster, which they are. And in theory, that is better than, say, winning 68 games and having a 7-win improvement over last season. But most of your best contributors are the veteran players. And you know what? I mean, whether you're going to win 68 or you're going to lose 110, you do need more from these young players. And there's going to be those kind of growing pains. And we'll talk about it here in a little bit. What are some of the other young players that can come up? But, you know, to your point, the Rockies obviously color themselves as a draft and develop team, but their development of young players has really left a lot to be lacking in a major way. The bottom of the Rockies lineup right now, you know, last night's 1-9, 7, 8, 9, they all had an OPS under 400, and they're all, I believe, batting under 200. And it was just, it's rough. You know, the Dodgers were kind of, I said this the other day on the Rockies Insider, kind of ripe for the picking. And by ripe for the picking, I mean maybe Rockies can come away with one win because of how poor the Dodgers have been playing. But when you are a team that is, you know, 3-14, like the Rockies, and have a negative 50 run differential now, only the ninth team since 2000 with a negative 50 run differential through the first 17 games of a season, when you are that bad and the Dodgers are as good as they are, even when they are not at their peak, they're going to be able to beat teams of the Rockies ilk. I mean, Austin Gomber talked about this, you know, when he went on the IL, about, you know, if you look at what he was able to do down in AAA, he's like, yeah, it looked like I performed a lot better than I did. It's just that the guys I was playing against, they're minor leaguers, and I know how to exploit those guys, and I know how to beat them even when I don't have my best stuff. That's the Dodgers and Rockies right now. So it's going to be hard for the Rockies to win one, and it's going to be hard for them to avoid a six-game road trip losing streak in San Diego, in LA, which frankly is not that surprising given how poorly they play when they go west and how good the Padres and Dodgers have been.
Yeah. To be honest, it has not been as bad as it could have been, at least in Los Angeles. The Padres series was maybe the worst series I've ever seen. It was the first time the Rockies had been shut out in a 3-game series ever. And here in LA, the Rockies have honestly been getting out of jams. So I guess credit the pitching staff for that. They've been putting a lot of people on base, but somehow in the later innings, the Rockies get a couple guys on and it feels like, okay, they're one, you know, a 3-run homer away from tying the game. That's a better spot to be in, because it does feel like you were kind of saying the Dodgers, when they're at their best, or even if they're playing at their average, it feels like this series could have been even worse than it's been so far.
Dodgers go to 17-4 when playing on Jackie Robinson Day, which started back in 2004. So, you know, they definitely had that aspect going for them. So let's talk about the lineup. Let's talk about Chris Bryant. He goes on the IL with lumbar degenerative disc disease, a compression in his lower back that, you know, should stick with him through the duration of his life. And it's something that he was diagnosed with, I believe, for the first time last year. And so he's been playing through this and still hitting the middle of the Rockies lineup for some reason. I don't really think there are a ton of great options to be hitting fourth or fifth. So name recognition alone, perhaps that does make a little bit of sense. But Chris Bryant, in his career with the Rockies, 170 games played, 106 games in the field, 62 at DH. Before he came to Colorado, he had only started 8 games as the designated hitter, 17 home runs, 61 RBI, 84 OPS plus, negative 1.6 BWAR. So $182 million for 170 games. Noah, here's the loaded question. Do we see Chris Bryant suit up for the Colorado Rockies and play in a game again this season or any season in the future?
I think the answer is no. I think a lot of fans want the answer to be no, and I think even then they'd be surprised if it actually is no, and I'd probably fall in that boat from as a fan perspective. It's reached a point where I do feel bad for Chris Bryant because the injuries that he has gone through have been really, really difficult. And any time that you see the word disease and degenerative disc disease, that tells me it's well worse than anything that I thought was happening. He had the plantar fasciitis a couple of seasons ago. As you were posing the question, I actually remember last season in LA, he made a catch against the netting. I believe he was at first base that day, but he made the catch. And I remember saying, wow, I'm surprised he was able to get up because he had been hurt so frequently. It was kind of a twisting catch. Lo and behold, he went on the injured list the next day. So it feels like any tweak is just so deteriorating to his health. I have a really hard time seeing him play for the Rockies again, given the fact that this is now a disease. And when in the lineup, he just has not produced.
Yeah, they have to find a way for everyone to feel happy about the resolution. Like, there needs to be a resolution that's out there. And I think, you know, Chris Bryant, he wants to get paid his money, and rightfully so. Like, he's not going to give that money back. And so in order to continue to get paid, he's got to go out there and, you know, make his best effort to try to be healthy and do all those things. And, you know, he did that during the off season. And as you said, feeling bad about Chris Bryant, it's interesting because, you know, this podcast comes on the heels of an article, I believe, that did just drop on Wednesday about Nolan Jones, a great article by Zach Mizell of The Athletic, talking about the year that Nolan Jones had last year with the death threats following a rough start to the Rockies season where, you know, he makes an error in Chicago. That was bad. You know, he struggled. He was injured. The birth of his first child and the health issues that she had. Just all of these things kind of really impacting a guy who already was someone who battled with mental health things. I think we all do, but some of us embrace it in different ways, or some of us talk about it publicly in different ways, in different capacities. And he's someone that, you know, journals and writes and really takes those things seriously and to heart. And, you know, to know that, you know, Chris Bryant is getting nothing but vitriol coming at him from, I imagine, mostly just Rockies fans, because he's still beloved in Chicago. You know, every time I talk about the Colorado Rockies, or, you know, meet somebody new and they say, you know, what do you do for a living? And I tell them that I cover the Rockies. You know, we talk about Chris Bryant, and a lot of times they're Cubs fans and they go, oh, it's so sad. And, you know, he's so beloved and he's going to continue to be beloved in Chicago. But yet there's this other contingency. It's, you know, the squeaky wheel always gets the grease. And so those people that are negative and those people that are, you know, lobbing insults and just being negative towards Chris Bryant, you hear those and you feel those, I think, you know, a lot more. So there is that aspect of it. From a team perspective, you can still be frustrated in the team. I think you can be frustrated in Chris Bryant, you know, to a certain degree. But now, as you said, with this lumbar degenerative disc disease, this is kind of out of his hands. There is now only so much that he can do to play beyond those means. There are times in which you're going to have to play hard. You're going to have to play injured. You're going to be banged up. That's just a fact of baseball. But now I think things are changing, and the perspective is slowly starting to shift to maybe having a little bit more compassion for Chris Bryant. If you don't have that compassion for the team and the GM and the owner who first signed him to that deal that it already seemed like it was a bad decision at the time, I think that's still fair and that's still in play, because, you know, that nothing has changed in light of this news because of how bad his production was before this diagnosis and after. And so it will be really hard to see a world in which, you know, he is back on the field with the Rockies. I don't know when he is no longer a member of the Rockies. That still could take another year before any official retirement or any, again, checking off all the boxes to say, okay, you can retire, you're going to get your money, and Rockies, you're going to get your insurance money in terms of this player that, you know, you've invested, you have to pay, but now he can no longer play. That could take at least another year, which is going to be frustrating for fans, because that's another spot on the 40-man roster, but we're just going to have to wait and see how it really plays out.
Yeah, I think back to the preseason and the offseason. I want to say even as late as January, an article came out where Chris said it was the best he's felt in a while. And that does make me feel bad, because last season there was an article talking about how he really wants to be out there with his guys. And I know it kind of went viral because he in there he said, like, I don't know what to do, so I just buy random things on Amazon. Like, that's not what he meant. It didn't come across in the way that he intended it to come across. But, you know, as we sit here on April 16th, 2025, Chris Bryant did not stay hurt on purpose. And from a Rockies fan perspective, a healthy Chris Bryant would not have this team competing for the postseason. So at a certain point, look, you can be mad at him because all that money is not playing on the field, but he didn't offer himself all of that money. Like you said, the deal happened between two people and an ownership group and a player.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it does eventually play out. How much he'll be, you know, still be around the team, trying to offer up some of that veteran leadership in the clubhouse, which is something, you know, they obviously need in the wake of Charlie Blackmon's retirement, and something that they need too with Brenton Doyle being out for the past five games. We'll see if he's in the lineup on Wednesday. I talked about this on the Rockies Insider, the fact that there's not a ton of depth right now in the minors that the Rockies can tap into. You know, they've been saying for the last couple of years, and you know what, I'll take myself to task too, because I did like their improved depth going into this season as far as the upside of it, but the floor is definitely lower than certain veterans. Like, you understand why they did need to bring in a Nick Martini and a Kyle Farmer. And, you know, again, part of that is failure of the developmental process of the organization, because these young players aren't ready to immediately step in and make an impact. I mean, Ezekiel Tovar has been the lone guy, I think, that has immediately made an impact in all areas of the game in the last 5-6 years. You know, for all the people that are banging their keyboard saying, man, there's such bias out there from all these people saying that the Rockies farm system isn't as good, you know, as I think they are, there's evidence out there. I mean, look at the amount of players that the Rockies have produced that have really been big league contributors over the last few years. It's been Doyle. It's been Tovar. Tolia did it for about half a season. Doyle did it defensively his first season, but not offensively. So it took a while to hit the ground running. And a lot of other teams have a much better track record of that development of those players and guys who have become all-stars that are homegrown, that are actually drafted and developed. So with Doyle out of the lineup and his leadership not there and that big bat at the top of the lineup, I mean, this is an offense that is really struggling to score runs. I think they're going to continue to struggle to score runs even when they get back home against the Nationals. And it's troubling because you really begin to see how much this offense was really predicated on Doyle becoming an all-star, Tovar becoming an all-star, and then basically Tolia becoming an all-star. And right now, Tolia was not in the starting lineup Tuesday night for the first time since, I want to say, June 6th of last year. It ended his 106 consecutive game streak played at first base, which was a franchise record at the position. I believe second longest consecutive game streak played in franchise history behind Vinny Castilla. So, you know, the expectations and the things that the Rockies had really kind of highlighted as being the key parts of their success this season have not been successful.
No, and the Iron Mike nickname now goes up in flames as soon as you had dubbed it.
They used it in the game notes. Did you see it that one day? They had Iron Mike.
I saw it after
you. I think it's still in play. He's going to start a new streak. We're going to bring it back.
Well, the Rockies need him to come back and be effective because, as you mentioned, this is a lineup that, I mean, as you think about every other major league organization, the lineup cards that they put out every day, it's up there for the least proven lineup, maybe the least scary lineup, and that can only change with results. The problem is Tovar, he's won for his last 20, I believe. It's at least 16. And Michael Tolia has been, at least as of a couple days ago, the second worst qualified hitter in the sport by WAR, batting WAR. It's very scary what we're looking at organizationally on offense. Now, the pitching has been in a place where it feels like the arms that the Rockies have coming up are extremely bright. But on offense, Zach Veen, before being called up, had a five-hit ball game in AAA. He was tearing the cover off the ball. And since coming up, he has an OPS of 310, which shout out to our guys that looked this up at Blake Street Banter. It's the fourth lowest OPS by a player in their first eight games in Rockies history. Adeel Amador is number one on that list at 207. I think Adeel will be fine. His bat-to-ball skills are what has gotten him to the big leagues. Zach Veen has been looking at three fastballs up in the zone and swinging through them for the past 5 days. Last night, there was a runner on third with one out. Felt like a very prove-it at-bat to Bud Black. Unfortunately, Zach Veen punched out on a fastball up in the zone. And the Rockies broadcast said if he doesn't, you know, MLB pitching will force you to make adjustments. They will force you to prove that you can hit the ball in that area where right now you can't. And until the Rockies see results, like the Cincinnati Reds, every time they call someone up, it feels like they hit a home run in the first three games. I know that's not true, but it feels like it should be. The Rockies are so desperately searching for an impact young player to not have an impact young player to have an impact that does not fall off the second year. I think everyone right now is extremely wary of Michael Tolia and kind of how Nolan Jones trended. Now Nolan's in Cleveland system, new eyes on him. He can blossom into whatever they can make him into, but the Rockies have to make improvements. And I don't even know where it starts.
Yeah. It's, There's a lot of different things you can do, but are the Rockies willing to do those things? I'm not. I've said it before. I'm not one of those people that are out for someone's job. But sometimes when you make a coaching change or coaching changes, that wakes up a lot of people in the room. And I don't know if the Rockies top brass or the owner Dick Monfort, frankly, is interested in making those kind of changes, which, you know, I think is maybe doing a disservice to the team, everybody in the clubhouse, the fan base. It's not good. One guy that could possibly come up and maybe make an immediate impact, probably not on a large scale, but still somewhat of an immediate offensive impact, is Braxton Fulford. The transaction of Chris Bryant going on the IL opened up a spot on the active roster for catcher Braxton Fulford, who should be in the lineup to make his major league debut here on Wednesday, and much like Zach Veen, was tearing it up down in AAA. 452 batting average, 541 on base, and an even 1,000 slugging percentage, thanks to five homers, 10 RBI in 10 games. You know, was leading the Pacific Coast League with a 1345 OPS, fourth best, in fact, in all of the minors on top of that. So he's been a guy that the organization has talked about a lot. You know, the last couple of years when they talk about their best catchers, Braxton Fulford, even go back 2 years ago when it was really all about Drew Romo, Fulford was immediately that guy. Same year he was drafted, he was in the Arizona Fall League working with the pitching staff. And so he's been a player that they've really lauded for a while. And it's nice to see him finally get an opportunity and maybe partially because of how rough the play Jacob Stallings has had on both sides of the ball. You know, this might be an opportunity for Fulford to stick in the majors and maybe even finish the year in the bigs with the Rocks.
Yeah, it's great for Braxton because it does feel like he's flown under the radar for a lot of Rockies fans and even organizational fans. Blake Street Banter covers the Rockies prospects more than anyone out there. And you know, Aaron knew how good Braxton was, but it feels like even in the BSB community, everyone's like, oh, like, let's learn about Braxton. I'm excited for him to come up. I think it is kind of funny that Hunter Goodman was in pretty good drought there, and then Fulford gets called up, and all of a sudden Goodman has a hit in each of the last two nights, and one of them was a home run. So, I mean, to your point about making changes in any way can kind of fire up a guy. But sticking kind of close to that point, did you see Ryan Spielborgs on the podcast talk about how changes are possible in the future? And he, you know, gave the, you know, I would never call for anyone's job talk as well, but he kind of hinted that like changes are closer than maybe people think the reality might be.
No, I hadn't heard that. I mean, I imagine, you know, the Rockies always, I think for the most part, discuss everything, but I also know that they dismiss a lot of things quicker than they should. So no, I hadn't heard that. Where did he say that? And what did he say exactly? Was it on Sirius XM radio?
I saw it was a video clip that I saw, and gosh, it had his name in the corner like it was on Zoom. But he said when the way that things are going right now, it can't continue like this. And very defensively and kind of carefully, he said, like, changes in a situation like this are possible, but I would never call for anyone's job. That was kind of the gist of it. So a very careful sentiment that, you know, I mean, that was when the Rockies hadn't scored in a franchise best or worst time. But gosh, it feels like right now everyone's kind of on edge.
Yeah. I don't know what changes they would be interested in making. And again, this is, you know, part of the issue for the organization in general is really recognizing where they're at as an organization and, you know, how, you know, poorly this reconstruction or this rebuild has gone without a true plan in place other than, hey, you know, we've invested a lot in these prospects. And so we're going to give them an opportunity to see if they can make an impact versus saying, okay, we've got these guys, but are they going to make an impact? Can we actually evaluate that impact? And if it's not going to happen, maybe we can push the timeline down a couple years. We can trade prospects for prospects. Again, be a little bit more aggressive. Evaluate your players. Evaluate what you have in a true sense versus just saying, hey, these things sort of, you know, these things will sort themselves out, which is a comment that Bill Schmidt has said a lot with all of these outfielders for the last 2 years. You got a lot, you know, of young outfielders. You can't possibly play all of them. What are you going to do? It'll sort itself out. As if one will, you know, one just magically becomes an all-star immediately. One will become a guy that can be a fringe all-star caliber kind of outfielder. And then another one will be like a fourth outfielder type. When, as we've seen so far with so many of these outfielders, it takes a while for them to get going. And there is only so much playing time to go around. So maybe it sorts itself out. But if you actually inject yourself into the situation and pivot, it'll sort itself out in a much better way rather than the natural way. So in the comments, it's absolutely frustrating in that it seems that many good players on the Rockies never seem to want to stay. Nolan Arenado, Matt Holliday. I don't know that that's true about Matt Holliday. And finally, we signed a good player that wanted to be here, and he can't. He can't play. Yeah, that is very frustrating. And again, the common element throughout all of this, you know, tumultuous time is the owner. And that, unfortunately, is something that can't change, that it could change, but it's not something you're not going to go, man, you know, Dick Monfort even said it after the Arenado trade. Like, there's been times when I thought, oh, I should, you know, I'd like to fire myself. He's not going to. So that is not ever going to change, period.
Yeah, the owner with two sons that, like, it, that – I don't see ever happening. The same way that the Oakland Athletics moved from Oakland before an ownership change happened. But to your point about the outfield depth and kind of circling back to our talk about the veterans that the Rockies signed this offseason to try to buoy the young guys that might struggle early and that have struggled early. Signing Mickey Moniak doesn't, in my eyes, help the problem sort itself out. But I've been pleasantly surprised with his play. He dropped a fly ball in, I believe, the second series of the season. Or maybe it was in Tampa, I think. And since then, he's made four diving catches in the outfield. And the other night, not last night, but on Monday, he had two hits, both against lefties. What do you make of Moniak's play so far?
Yeah, defensively, I had my concerns. As you said, that ball, I think that might have gotten lost a little bit in the wind there. And actually, it was in Philadelphia where he dropped one. There was another couple other plays where maybe you come up firing, you get the guy at home plate, but there was no interest in that. And so, yeah, I had my concerns defensively. And then you see him, you know, make that sliding catch. Then the first pitch of Chase Dolander's major league debut. And there's been some other really nice plays. So, again, now you're starting to see why, okay, you did need a little bit of backup for Brenton Doyle. And so that's good. That fits. He has been a little bit better at the plate. You know, I did not personally realize at the time he had hit 14 home runs over the last 2 years, which, again, is not eye-popping numbers, but that is, you know, a young guy that I think for a lot of folks who, you know, whether you cover baseball and you're paying attention 24/7 to everything that's happening, you can only know so much about every team and every player on every roster. And so Mickey Moniak, unfortunately, was a first overall pick that really never came to fruition and sort of cast off like that. And sure, there's probably some disappointment if, you know, you bought stock in Mickey Moniak and, you know, whether you were literally doing that with baseball cards, right? With his you know, Bowman debut and all those other things. But you look and go, okay, he's starting to put a solid career together for himself. And it's taken him a little while to get, you know, his feet underneath him with Colorado, but his play definitely has been a lot better. And he's a guy too, that despite they signed him to a 1 year deal, he is not in his fifth year of service time. So they're going to have him for at least one more year. I think maybe even two more years. You know, we'll see if he, you know, continues to play this well. So it was one of those signings like Tyro Estrada, where it's a 1 year deal, but the guy can be around for another year. So I, you know, it's been a fine pickup. Again, still doesn't mean that, you know, the fans that were disappointed or critical of the Rockies for trading Nolan Jones and then picking a Mickey Moniak and then not putting Zach Veen on the opening day roster. I think that's still, you know, a valid take to have, because you want to see as many young guys as possible and not have new young guys injected into the scene like Moniak, even though he's only 26 years old. You know, it has been interesting to see. And even if we look down at AAA and say, well, who else could you possibly want in center field or in the outfield? The two other guys, there's only two other players on the 40-man roster that are not currently in the majors or not on the injured list. And that's Jordan Beck and Yankiel Fernandez. So at one point in which there was nine outfielders, I think at last year at one point, you had Greg Jones and Nolan Jones was there too as well, of course. But you had all of these outfielders, Charlie Blackmon. They're down to just Jordan Beck and Yankiel Fernandez, not in the majors. Yankiel's been good with an OPS in the low 700s. Jordan Beck has struggled mightily since going back down to the minors. So those two guys as options to possibly help, you know, give a little bit more life to the offense, not exactly, not right now for them. Sam Hilliard has been serviceable, so he can be one of those guys where if you add him back into the 40-man roster and when it's time to call somebody else up, you can designate him for assignment and potentially not lose him and still keep him. Owen Miller and Keston Hera have not been very serviceable at all. So there's really no help right now for the Rockies. This is their team, and there's nowhere to go but up, but there's also nowhere to go.
Yeah, it's the worst start in franchise history. If Brenton Doyle goes on the injured list, would they be able to call someone up that's from just on the four, one of the two options you said, or
it's
would
only
Sam
be, it's only Beck and Fernandez, and both of those guys you probably, you know, wouldn't be too excited about, you know, calling them up or exposing them to big league pitching. Fernandez has played a little bit better, so he would more likely than not be that guy to maybe make his debut. I don't know how much playing time that would give you, but you know, the Rockies, frankly, and I don't think a ton of other teams have behaved like this with their active roster, but the Rockies have been fine with playing a man short. I mean, again, they've been doing it with Chris Bryant on the roster where, you know, he can only play so much. So if he's in the starting lineup, you're not playing short because you have the full use of your bench. But if he's not in the starting lineup, you're basically playing with, you know, a 25 man roster. And right now they're playing with 25 guys because Brent Doyle is, you know, just day to day. And he apparently is somewhat close. He's like a 90%, he said. So he was able to do a little bit of running down at Dodger Stadium on Tuesday. But, you know, with him not being in that lineup, there's really nowhere else that they can turn where you'd feel good about it, right?
Nothing that's coming to mind. Sam Hilliard might be the one that's next up because he does have that big league experience. Then again, do you want to pull the all-time Isotopes home run leader out of AAA? I don't know. Let him continue to stretch his record out. It's farther down our rundown here, but it's percolating in my mind. The Rockies are only home for three games before hitting the road again, going to Kansas City and then coming home for.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Couple of series. I really feel like this is a pivotal three-game series that the Rockies have this weekend against Washington. They debut their City Connects on Friday, which also happens to be a Dolander start day. It's been 70 degrees in Denver this week, and all of a sudden it's going to be 30. Is what I'm is that why you're sick? The change in weather?
Could be. Yeah. I'm just late nights and not sleeping well. Yeah, sick again. Yeah, Friday's game is pretty questionable. We might end up having a doubleheader. Look, there have been some miserable days at Coors Field where just nothing is going right for the team. The weather is not participating. The Nuggets are playing at the same time on Saturday as the Nats, so that's obviously going to impact attendance. If there is a doubleheader on Saturday, I imagine it's going to be a two-for-one special. You know, there's a lot of times in which after the first game, they clear the stadium out, and then, you know, you've got your tickets that you sell for the second game. But because of how poorly the ticket sales have been right now for the Rockies, I imagine if you go to that game on Saturday, just stick around for the second one. And then, you know, I don't know, they'll announce attendance as like low 20,000 because they're really just combining the two games together. So, you know, pivotal. I don't know that word exists for the Rockies right now, because again, we thought the first 100 loss season was going to be pivotal to bring about changes for this team, and yet it hasn't. So until something changes, there is nothing that can happen with this team right now that will force a change. I just can't believe that that would happen, because there's been so many other things that you would have thought would have brought about some kind of change, a significant change, particularly in the coaching staff. And yet it's the same group. It's the same group of players. It's the same front office. So why should that change now?
I just think it reaches a point where it's still April and it feels like it's August for the Rockies, and they have not won a night game, which when they were struggling through the first couple of series, Drew Goodman told the story on the air that Ryan McMahon had said he's looking forward to getting into a routine, because the players, you know, they don't like showing up at the ballpark at different times. They like settling in. And they hinted about the Rockies playing at 6:40 every day, getting in a routine, getting things figured out. They haven't played at home a lot so far, but it's to me, I said pivotal, because someone has to put their foot down. It's getting ridiculous. 3-15 now? 3-14. To lose the biggest threat to a fan base and a franchise is apathy. And the second that you allow your fans to be fine with losing and show that it just is what it is, I think it's really dangerous. I think bringing in these City Connect jerseys tried to inject some life, and shoot, I like the hats. I'll have to see the jerseys to get a second opinion on them, and maybe we can talk about that as we wind down our show. But it just feels dangerous right now, and I know that we've seen this before, but they're trending in a direction. They have the last 2 years with a low water mark, and right now they're going to drown under it. So how does something not have to give?
The apathy has existed for about 3 years now. During the World Baseball Classic, I had so many people come up to me in 2023, in March of 2023, saying, I forgot how much I loved baseball. I forgot how good of a sport it was because of the World Baseball Classic. And the reason why they forgot how much they liked baseball and how great of a sport baseball was because their team in town were the Colorado Rockies. And that was in 2023. So we are now three seasons removed from that. And again, nothing, I don't see anything, any cause for anything to change, because it's really been that same thing. It's frustrating. It's a bad look, but it's been the same thing. Look, this is a team that lost 100 games in back-to-back seasons. And what did they do this offseason to address that? What do they do to try to get better? Right? Like, they have not – the last starting pitcher that they've signed to a free agent deal, not, you know, made a trade for off waivers like a Cal Quantrill, or picked up a guy who was on the 40-man roster like Jose Mojica, but the last free agent starting pitcher – that they signed to a major league deal, not a minor league deal, that if you make the team out of spring training, you'll go ahead and be on the big league roster, was Kyle Kendrick in 2015. It's been a decade since they've signed a free agent pitcher. Now, say what you will about their young rotation in 16, 17, 18, that's fine. And then Noah, you know what you're saying about, you know, the guys getting in a groove at night games, that's an excuse, which the Rockies aren't actually making, and no one's truly making. It's just that could be a reason why this is happening, why it's taking a while to gain some traction, right? All teams are trying to gain that traction. But the organization as a whole could help their players gain a little bit of traction pretty easily. You know how? Schedule more night games in spring training. The Rockies don't do that. They had about three night games, and I think all three of them were when they were on the road, when they had to travel to another ballpark. So how can you really get ready for a season of night games when all of your work is nice and convenient and you get to the facility at 8 a.m., you play a 1 o'clock game, you get done at 4, and then boom, you get to go home for the night. And that's a nice clock in, clock out. Have some night games in there. Rockies as an organization have made that choice to not do that. And here we are, 3-14. So if that's a big reason why, is that something that, you know, they've had these rough starts for the last few years, and yet no change in their spring training night schedules. Again, until something actually changes, don't expect any changes.
I thought it was an interesting point when they brought it up on the broadcast, sure. And your counterpoint made it all the more interesting to me because, yeah, I mean, I would have never thought about that, and I pay attention to the team more than a significant portion of people in baseball do. Yeah, I would have never thought about that. Schedule night games to prepare for the season. Yeah, the Rockies, when they are good, typically benefit from a great April and May. I think a very common point right now in the fan base is, look, the Rockies can be struggling, but to be boring and struggling, that's where the line is drawn for a lot of people. The Rockies play in the ballpark that should yield the most runs per game. And right now the Rockies offense ranks dead last or super close to last in nearly every offensive category. I saw something talking about how the Rockies had a team batting average of 219 and the Dodgers was 230. Yet because of the slugging percentage and home run differences, the Rockies had 10, the Dodgers had 30 home runs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so the Rockies and Dodgers, Patrick Saunders tweeted about it last night. The bat to ball skills are just in a completely different realm.
Yeah. Batting average is not a terribly important statistic there. The reason why OPS is this be all end all number is because if you look at a game by game basis, you beat a team by scoring more runs. So if you have more runs, you win 100% of the time. Okay. Obviously. Now, if you have a better batting average than the other team in a given game, you might win about 45% of the time. If you have more stolen bases than the other team, you might win 43% of the time. If you had a better on base percentage than the other team in a given game, you might win about 55% of the time. So already getting on base or not making an out is more valuable than batting average. And then if you have a better slugging percentage, it's 58%. But if you have a better OPS in a single game, you have a better chance of winning that game 70-some percent of the time. Those are not the exact figures, but that's why batting average really isn't all that important. But putting that ball in play and making good outs, advancing runners, and not striking out is so important. To your point about being boring, in 2023, they lost 100 games for the first time. And to a person, we all said this was a way better season, a way better end to a season than in 2022 because there was more excitement. You had Tovar, you had Doyle, and it felt like there was like some juice that was in the ballpark. And now that juice has kind of stagnated and it has been very boring. And you know, the bullpen has been okay. There's rotation has been okay. And we've talked about some of the changes that you can make on the offensive side. Jaden Hill has been really good down in the minors. If you do want to make a switch in that bullpen, he struck out 13 of the 21 batters he's faced to begin the season, and he hasn't even issued a walk. The bullpen in Albuquerque has been really solid. So if you want to make a move down there, you certainly can do it. There are four guys that are not on the 40-man roster, but you might see at some point this year. Zach Agnos, the veteran Diego Castillo, and the two lefties, Ryan Rolison and Jeffrey Yan, those guys have pitched really well down in Albuquerque, which is a rarity for a reliever down with the isotope. So that maybe could inject some life when that's needed in the bullpen, which you could argue is needed in the rotation. Tanner Gordon has been really solid in three starts, 4.63 ERA. For minor league players, one of the biggest numbers and the most important things to look at in predicting future success is strikeout to walk ratio. It means you're throwing strikes, you're not walking guys, and when you are throwing strikes, the batters are missing. That is a huge indicator. And right now, Tanner Gordon, 11 strikeouts, 2 walks. Carson Palmquist, 11 strikeouts, 3 walks in his 2 starts. So, you know, there is some good pitching that can help them out. It's just unfortunate that what the Rockies really need are some bats to help them out. And there's some good ones down in Double A, but that's just too far away. Dion Jorge, 429 batting average entering Tuesday night, was second in the Eastern League. Kyle Karros continues to play great ball, 296 batting average entering this week with a couple home runs, OPS over 1,000 through 8 games. Cole Carrig just behind him. So those are guys I think we might see in the second half of the season. But unfortunately, that injection of life into the lineup just doesn't exist for the Rockies right now in the minors.
Jeffrey Yan would be the guy that would put butts in seats. I That would be awesome, and that might be the perfect move right now. The Rockies lefties have done fine out of the bullpen, and the bullpen has settled down a little bit since the early season woes. But, yeah, as we look ahead to the National Series, the starters on Friday, Chase Dolander against Mackenzie Gore. That'll be a good pitching.
That's a matchup right there. I love that one.
Saturday, Kyle Freeland against Brad Lord for Washington. And then Sunday, Antonio Senzatella against Jake Irvin. I wish I had the numbers pulled up, but it feels like I've never watched the Rockies hit against Jake Irvin. Feels like every time I see Irvin, he's dominating, which is kind of weird because he's not a household name. But
no.
As I'm thinking of
it. Didn't you want to talk a while about Brad Lord? I think you had a couple of hot takes on Brad Lord. Go ahead. I'll mute myself and whatever you need. 3, 4, 5 minutes. Oh, you just 7 minutes on Brad Lord. Go ahead. Knock it out, King.
My newest favorite player that I didn't know I had, Brad Lord. What a name, though. My goodness.
I had not heard of that guy until I was looking at the series preview. He just made his debut this year, though.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Hey, I bet his jersey sells all right.
Lord? Yeah, that's pretty good, actually. Yeah, it could be.
I mean, looking ahead to the weekend, are you excited for the debut of the City Connect? I don't know if I ever got your opinion on those.
Well, man, I'm really interested to see what happens if this game does end up getting snowed out. And, you know, because it's a Dolander start, they might err on the side of caution and, like, call it early so that it's not a what's going to happen. So we still have got about, 48 hours until that decision gets made at the time of us recording. Yeah. I talked about this on Saturday, immediately when they dropped, did a live show over on the Rockies Insider channel on YouTube. Check that out with all the ins and outs, looking at all the colors. I think it's great. I think immediately seeing it, I thought, yes, this is going to look great on the field. People are going to love it. And over time, people that maybe didn't like it at first, they seem to have liked it a lot more. And I think it's going to do really good numbers in jersey sales, in cap sales. And look, the Rockies know what they're doing when it comes to branding and merchandise, other than the fact that there's not enough Dinger merchandise for adults, which I know Dinger's polarizing for some people, but look, you put his logo or his head on a fitted cap, there's going to be a lot of adults that wear that. And that will rock the Dinger. So I like them. I think they're great. And I didn't realize there was pink in it. I thought the pink was orange and the orange was yellow. But no, the numbers inside, or the color of the numbers, is orange. And then the other lighter accented color is a razor pink, I believe is what it's called. I like them. I think they're great. What about you?
You know, I really do like the hats. I think the mountain logo is like the sweetest thing. I know Aaron BSB doesn't like it, but I love the mountain logo. I think it is so sweet. Yes, it's so odd.
The Ball Mountain. Show some respect to the Ball Mountain. That's what they call it on the inside.
Mount Ball, maybe. That's what we call it. But I really like the hats. I think the numbers look similar to the Nuggets numbers.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
That's fine.
I do wish it had buttons. Like the collared look, we'll see. I mean, it might look good out on the field. But like when you're trying to sell a jersey, I think that'll be the biggest hold up for a lot of people.
Is that it's a pullover and not buttons?
I think so. Because the baseball jerseys typically – they sell, or baseball uniforms, they sell because they have that classy, stylish look about them. And I don't know. I've got to see it in person or in action on my TV on Friday.
That's an interesting take. The collar with the three colors on the collar is the one thing I did not like immediately at first. And it's grown on me a little bit, so I'll be interested to see what that looks like in person. But you're right, there is a that City Connect style that they're trying to sell of, like, open buttons up and then you can have a shirt on underneath. Whereas with this, that's the jersey. Like you're not, you that's the only thing that you can see. You can't have an open jersey with a t-shirt underneath that says something. Although on the flip, you could go double jersey. You could now wear the City Connect with, damn, you could go City Connect with the home pinstripes, and then throw the vest over it to really get your layers. Yeah. You could go three deep on that mug.
You can work the old green City Connects in there somehow. I like what you said about you think they'll grow popular like the last ones did.
Definitely. I have zero doubt about it.
Because I remember when the license plate look came out, I wasn't the biggest fan. But then, like, now I have one. So I caved. I
wanted green. So for me, I wanted green really badly. I figured there'd be more purple in it. It's fine that there really wasn't much at all. But I wanted green because, you know, from going to the ballpark, a lot of the ushers have these old school like starter jackets.
Yeah.
And they're like, they have the Coors Field logo on it and there's green in it. And you see the green and the purple together and it works. Those are two colors that play well together that you don't really see in the wild that much with a lot of teams. And so I thought, man, if you could really incorporate that green, it would look great. There's even some, you know, again, old school Orioles jackets that have that green in there from the grass of Camden Yards. And you go, green and orange? Like, yeah, like that. Maybe it's just more of a baseball thing, but those colors really play together well. So I love the city, the original one immediately. I didn't love this one as much, but it's still really good. It's going to sell well. It's still going to rank, I think, really high with people outside of the Colorado region that just look. And because, again, it does represent Colorado in that way of like, oh, yeah, the beautiful sunset. So if you're thinking about the state of Colorado, the city of Denver, going to Coors Field, sitting on the rooftop, paying $16 for a hard seltzer and not paying attention to the game on the field, that's the perfect City Connect jersey that you could have.
And I thought they did a really good job with the photo shoots. They pulled the guys in there midwinter, it looked like. And
it was at Rockies Fest. There's snow on the ground. You can see. I have to ask Kyle Cooper, who took all those photographs, and really his photographs of the sunsets at Coors Field were big inspiration to these uniforms. But I'm dying to see some of the outtakes of the photos, because apparently you can see their hot breath coming out because it was, you know, like 25 degrees and they're up on the rooftop, or they're up on the rock pile taking these photographs with Coors Field in the background at, I don't know, 10 PM, like at night in the wintertime. I definitely want to see those. I imagine they'll see the light of day somehow. And you can see in some of them, like their noses are getting a little bit red and, you know, their ears are red. And so I just thought it was incredibly well executed. And I like that, again, being different than everyone else. And going with the pullover, like, I think they deserve some credit for that and going with that design, because correct me if I'm wrong, they were the only team that had green in the City Connect in the last mm-hmm.
one. So, yeah. Well, and some other teams have tried to incorporate purple. I saw MLB posted the Mets with purple undersleeves talking about how good it looked. And there were some comments like, wow, you're posting just because they're trying to be like the Rockies, which I was like, yeah, I'm going to like that comment. The photo shoot for when they did the original City Connects had Kyle Freeland, Herman Marquez, Ryan McMahon, and Connor Joe. And now for the new one, what, they just replaced Joe with, they have Doyle and Tovar in there too now. So who else got?
Yeah. Kyle Freeland was at the University of Evansville. Oh, okay. For the number retirement and breaking ground on the new facility there. So he wasn't able to be there at Rockies Fest and therefore to take those photographs. So, yeah, I guess McMahon's the only one that's been the carryover, and no Chris Bryant in either of those City Connects. So much for that. Noah, anything else you got to – oh, we did have one other thing to talk about. That I just learned this, and I thought this was interesting. That Jackie Robinson has two Hall of Fame plaques in Cooperstown in the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, which I did not realize. There's the original one from when he was first inducted in 1962, where he just wanted his baseball accomplishments and not, you know, making anything of, you know, the of his race and breaking the color barrier. He said, well, this is a museum for the greatest baseball players, not people who have moved the needle and have changed the culture. And then in 2008, you know, it was ultimately decided by his widow, Rachel Robinson, and a group of veterans at the Hall of Fame that, no, let's have a plaque that's true to him, that, you know, has his nickname on it. Cause that's another thing too. When you go to the Hall of Fame, you could see all the different players and their nicknames. His didn't say Jackie on it. It just had his full name of Jack Roosevelt Robinson. And so now it says Jackie, and it talks about obviously integrating baseball, and the courage that he showed in the face of adversity. So that was something that I actually did not realize. And a great article by Sweeney Murdy over at MLB.com.
That is pretty cool. And I've been there and I didn't realize that. So I guess I was at least 8 years ago. So I was just a little guy, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Everybody should get up to the Hall of Fame. It's especially an induction weekend. Like I don't really like crowds. I'd prefer them if they're not, but I've been to Cooperstown. I've been to the Hall of Fame in February and there's no one around. It's like a ghost town. And I don't like having the museum to myself. It's not as special to be like, I can just go, let me compare this and let me walk over to this, window and this enclosure and check that out and compare all these things. Like, it's better when there's people and you overhear stories and go, oh yeah, that's right. And oh, I didn't know that. And sharing different things and seeing people wearing different players' jerseys. It's way better when you do go in the summer. And if you can go during induction, it's an amazing experience. And they've even improved it where now they have a parade where they're in the back of these Ford pickup trucks and literally all the living Hall of Famers that show up are there. And you're like, you know, maybe 20 feet from them and they're waving and it's so cool. It's everybody needs to go and check it out. And now that there are three Rockies Hall of Famers, yes, I am including Jim Leland, but now that there are three Hall of Famers that represented the Colorado Rockies, everybody in Colorado should try to go out there, make a trip, go see a Yard Goats game. You are going to drive. You are going to sit in traffic a little bit. Maybe you can go out when they're playing the Mets. Might even be easier if you did a Phillies series too. Going from Philadelphia to Cooperstown might be a little bit more feasible than doing New York to Cooperstown, but everybody needs to make sure they go and check it out.
Yeah, I had a great experience and definitely worth checking out Cooperstown. You can check out more of my tweets just at Noah Spyrick down here somewhere. It's on either side. I'm not sure today, but and at Blake Street Banter.
And for more great segues, check me out on social media at Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB, and at Rockies Insider. Appreciate everybody joining us. Appreciate everybody giving us some wonderful momentum. But you know, as I like to say, momentum, it can only be as good as your next segue. So, of course, I'll talk to you then.